Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Father James Keenan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carrie.
I wonder if we could just start out with the idea of, you know, what is a conscience?
Conscience is really our encounter with God and our ability to understand that we're moral agents. A conscience is that which guides us so that we can exercise ourselves as moral agents. I think that many times when people think of conscience, they invoke it on a rare occasion, which is unfortunate, since for the most part, we, in our normal daily discourse and our engagement with other people, we're moral agents. So there's today in our societies, there's a deep disconnect between the fact that we understand ourselves as moral agents, but we don't actually realize that what guides us is our conscience. So conscience is the guide of us as moral agents.
And how does that manifest itself in us? Like, is it a gut feeling? Is it a prolonged reflection? Is it an instinct? Is it a kind of nagging sensibility?
Yes, it's like that last one, that nagging.
Yeah.
Right. You know, if anybody wants to know whether they have a conscience, they should ask themselves if they've ever had a guilty conscience. And if they haven't, then there's a certain dormancy going on with their conscience, I suggest. Most of the literature of conscience in history always shows that the awakening of conscience in a person is through a guilty conscience. There may be a few people that doesn't happen to, but for the most part, that's really the way a person discovers conscience, because what they discover is something happens to them in which their complacency with themselves is disturbed over moral matters.
Right.
And they realize, and they're puzzled, why should they be disturbed? And it's not like somebody coming up to you and saying you're disturbing. It's yourself actually saying to you. And that's when one discovers a conscience. It's something other than my desires. It's something that reminds me that I am a moral agent, whence I can have the experience of a guilty conscience.
So is it an other? Is it like the voice of the Spirit, the voice of God speaking to us? It's something we experience as coming from outside of ourselves and yet somehow from within?
I mean, there is something other about the conscience, because it's capable of actually judging ourselves. I mean, one of the basic functions of conscience is to review how we've acted. Even in Catholic practices of an examination of conscience, there's a certain sense that, you know, one goes into an examination of conscience where they ask for prayerful grace, that they can really look at their conscience and see how they've been acting and what has been their path of, you know, proceeding. So there is something that it's not, there can be a sense that it is an other, but it is completely within the person. It's where we encounter God. It's where we encounter ourselves as moral agents. But I do think that in ordinary discourse, when you hear people invoke conscience, at least in the States, it's usually about something that a person wants to take a particular stance on, and they'll say, I'm sorry, I have to follow my conscience, which is a very unhappy expression, you know, I'm sorry, I have to follow my conscience, because it's...
Or I can't do this in good conscience or something like that, right?
Yeah, but more often you hear this other one, I'm sorry, but I have to follow my conscience, right, as if this is the first moment that it's happening.
Right.
And it's when we're in some sort of disagreement. But I do think that, you know, if we had more of an attentiveness to conscience as it's played out in other countries, I think we would be much better. I think in the United States, when we talk about conscience, it has a legal tinge to it. I have to follow my conscience. I'm sorry, in this instance, I have to follow. We have conscience clauses. And we're more familiar with conscience here in the States when we're departing from a norm rather than when we're actually trying to govern ourselves. That's a difference between the way conscience has been taught in other countries as opposed to the way it's taught here.
Oh, that's very interesting. Now, we talk a lot in the church about having a well-formed conscience.
Right.
And I wonder, you know, how do you know if your conscience is well-formed? Is it nagging at you more, or is it nagging at you less because you're doing everything right?
I think that anybody who has an experience of a real experience of conscience has a fairly humble self-understanding. And you can see that when people are really called by conscience, say if they're working, you know, in a particular difficult place and they're trying to do a lot of work, they'll find themselves, you know, really hesitant and humbled about how they're proceeding. There's a certain way that, you know, when conscience is really always operative, you realize you're part of humanity and you're responsible for your part in it. So a person who's following her or his conscience or is mindful of their conscience, I think, has a more humble self-understanding than others. To use an example, right? And this is where I think that the States is different from other countries, say in Europe. After the Second World War, people in Germany and in Austria, and also people in France and Italy and Spain, where there was fascism, really asked themselves, "How could we have done this?" There was this real reflection. How did we follow so many different people and do all these horrendous activities?
Right.
And wasn't I really involved in that as well? And in the Catholic Church, the Renaissance of Conscience was born at the end of the Second World War. I mean, this is when all the different moral theologians in Europe began to say we were doing something where we were so complicit with systems that we never realized that we're accountable as moral agents for the way we should proceed. And so in Europe, there was an enormous turn to conscience that never happened in the United States because we returned from the war really feeling that we had followed the system was good and it was reliable. And so moral theologians wrote about conscience for 20, 30 years in Europe, and they were regularly repudiated by American moral theologians who felt there was no need for us to have such an emphasis on conscience and the rest. So conscience doesn't really get born in the United States until the Vietnam War, when some young men begin to do, you know, a conscientious objection to the draft.
Right.
And again, that's all in a legal framework where it's born. But the conscience that Germany had, that Italy, that France, that Spain had, that Austria had, was a conscience that actually said you were horrendous in your conduct during this war. And we can see now when we go to these countries, all their memorials to the Jews and to other victims of the Holocaust that had occurred, in which people own up to their history of misdeeds. And conscience then plays much more of a role in the ordinary life of a Christian in Europe than it does in the United States.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We're talking with Father James Keenan of Boston College about the role of conscience in moral decision-making. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation, which, of course, you can always join at 888-322-8465. That's 888-3-CATHOLIC. Stay with us on America This Week. Welcome back to America This Week. We're talking with Father James Keenan, a moral theologian at Boston College, about the conscience and the role of conscience in moral decision-making. And Father James, you were saying, before the break, that it wasn't really until the Vietnam War that we here in the United States, that moral theologians here in the United States, really began to take this issue in the very serious and deliberate way that it had been handled by theologians in Europe after the war. And it's kind of interesting that period also coincided with the beginning of the sexual revolution. We had the encyclical Humanae Vitae about issued by Paul VI about contraception. And so all of a sudden, this whole question of conscience comes to bear in lots of areas of our ecclesial life.
Right. But it came to bear as a dissenting voice.
Right.
In Germany and France and in Italy and in Austria, the experience was, what have we done? There's a certain lack of capacity of Americans, I think, to have an ordinary self-understanding in which they're culpable for some of the things that they do. There's a, you know, like I was trying to think when I think of, the, say, Germany and the U.S., you can go, it's hard to go to any city in Germany and not see some sort of memorial to the Jewish dead during the Holocaust. But in the United States, you know, where do we have any symbol of slavery and our history of slavery, or any symbol at all of our attempt to extinguish the Native American peoples? The American accountability is really problematic. We can see it also in the selection here again. But conscience really is something that, if conscience is operative, I think it's more what have I done or what am I doing rather than what am I entitled to do and what can I dissent from. I have no problem with dissent, mind you.
Right, right.
But it's in the context of somebody exercising a conscience on a daily basis. And I think that the language of conscience in the United States is about a right rather than a responsibility.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because you talk about this idea of conscience, and I think this is what you're saying is the broad belief in America, is that it sets you apart from something. But when you talk about what it means to have a well-informed conscience, there's this humility that lends itself sort of to community more so than someone who departs from that community.
Yeah, because you feel what responsibility really is. You feel like I belong to this. This is my commitment. This is the way I need to proceed. And, you know, I mean, conscience, one of the best places you can see conscience, I think, is in parents. You know, parents are, you know, labor to make sure that they're doing something right for their children. That strikes me as a healthy metaphor for what conscience looks like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can see in the concerns of American parents that they have for, you know, things right for their child. Not that their child have everything, but does their child fit in? Do they have good friends? How are they handling this? What's their confidence level? What's their relational level? That's very, very healthy. It would be nice if that, what we see in parents to their children, would be found in all Americans, that they were parenting themselves, you know, to ask themselves, are they doing this to be part of this, you know, culture that needs to be much more responsible in the world? But we don't see that here in the States. I mean, I think, for instance, of the refugee crisis and the way the United States is responding, it's usually about we need to protect ourselves, we need to make sure that things are safe, security is our major issue. Conscience is really much more interested in the other.
And I myself have written about what I believe to be a catastrophic failure of our national conscience in the early years of the AIDS crisis.
But, you know, there is a generosity to the United States, but sometimes I think we think of this generosity as something that's altruistic rather than required.
Right. But unless you have that kind of, you know, that moment of conscience when you can, as individuals and as a community, atone for these things, then, you know, you can, unless you have that check, that kind of humility, then you can very easily, you know, have an exaggerated sense of self. And in our own context, it takes the form of American, various forms of American exceptionalism and, you know, things like that. They give you a kind of inflated sense of your place.
Yeah.
And entitlement.
And I think that, you know, that's where, like, matters of dissent can fit in rather nicely. People can know when they have to dissent because of not about their what they need to pursue, but what they need to pursue with others, you know, how they see this situation to be. You know, like, for instance, if there were racist policies in a school and somebody dissents from the policy in the school, this is somebody who's acting to for others and trying to change things because they realize that things need to be bettered.
Right.
Now, in the context of church and conscience in terms of church teaching, can a well-formed conscience require us to sort of dissent from a church teaching in some way, or does a formed conscience sort of always end up leading us back to what the church says?
No, I think that in many instances, you know, the church cannot hardly fulfill directives for every area of our lives. And as a matter of fact, we're seeing the church shift its interest in what it wants to direct us in. And this is to be, I think, much more inclusive, and which is good. But I think what the church really needs to do in the United States is to awaken us to a conscience. I think our conscience is nothing more than a legal concept.
Right.
I don't think it has any real moral force. And I think that the best thing that our church could do, especially in the United States, would be to really teach the importance of conscience, not to be fearful that it will lead to dissent, but actually that it would be fearful that it will lead us to where the direction we're going in.
Right.
You know, I mean, any number of people will be suggesting that they see, you know, even the way this election is going, we see a certain tone of a people that you have to ask, where is conscience in all this? People know who they want to vote for, but one has to ask, is conscience involved in this voting? So I think that our church and its leadership could provide us with a whole new understanding of conscience. In Germany, for instance, although, you know, it's really fascinating, when Humanae Vitae comes out, all the bishops from Scandinavia, from Germany, from Holland, from Belgium, they all come out with statements that basically say, remember, this is church teaching, and therefore you should always follow your conscience.
Mm-hmm.
There was no real invocation of conscience when the Americans and other English-speaking countries, which were on different side, were on the same side of the war, when it came out, that conscience never made an appearance there, as it did in these other documents. So these bishops had grown up in seminary with all their moral theologians teaching them the importance of conscience. We never had those lessons.
Mm.
We've never had those lessons. We've had a lesson to listen to church teaching. And so we think these two things are incompatible. But as a matter of fact, what I think we need is to have a church teaching that teaches us that we have an obligation to our consciences. The Vatican teaches that, you know, a lot of Episcopal conferences in Europe teaches that, but in the United States, conscience seems to be a prerogative of a legal concept that the bishops can exercise when they go against Obamacare or when somebody, you know, 40 years ago, 50 years ago in the draft wanted to follow a selective conscientious objection status.
But it's also the way in which, it may not just be promulgated in a kind of legalistic way, but it's received in that way, isn't it? Because,
yeah.
The bishops, to their credit, put together a document for the election that's called Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship. But it seems to me that a lot of people, you know, took that document and they kind of, skip over the bit about conscience in the beginning, and they get right to, so who is it morally licit to vote for, right? And, you know, it becomes like a kind of legalistic analysis, and we say, well, okay, what's the bottom line here? Can I do this or can't I do this? But it kind of negates the whole idea of conscience, which is there at the beginning.
Right, and there's just something about it's also, if somebody actually talks about conscience, they're considered a progressive or a liberal or something like that,
right.
You know. And what I'm suggesting is something very different. I'm suggesting that in other countries where they've stressed conscience, they stressed it because they were so bereft of a conscience. I mean, they realized that for 30 years they had been bereft of a conscience when they woke up in 1945, you know, and out of the rubble of the war. But we haven't. You know, I think that our problems of racism in this country, you know, which is our real original sin, you know, and any number of people point that out. One has to ask, where is the communal conscience that says, that really acknowledges that that's our original sin? And how does it stay so perpetuated in 2016? Except for, I think, that we really don't have a sense of conscience.
How do we navigate the way in which we sort of respond to our own conscience as it relates to how others are behaving? I think sometimes you hear people say, well, I cannot in good conscience let you do this, or I cannot in good conscience let this happen, when sometimes that might be true, and sometimes it seems to be a cover for a kind of self-righteousness of I am right and you are wrong. How do we sort of navigate that relationship?
Yeah, and I think that falls to this notion that I have of a legal concept, you know, that sometimes when people insist on that, sometimes it is really out of a real self-care for another and for the sense that they're engaged in harm, as in when somebody intervenes in, you know, a person in an addictive behavior. And I think that that's really to be commended, because people are trying to exercise conscience in the care of others and to invoke others to assume a conscience in themselves. So I think that that's really good. But there's a lot of other instances that we hear people, you know, invoking conscience in order to govern other people's lives, when you say, well, how are you doing with your own life? You know,
right.
I mean, that's what I like to come back to. I just think that there's a complacency in the American persona, you know, and right now I think we're going through some anxiety about our place in the world and our place in society and the rest. And I think that before we try to make ourselves feel better, we might ask ourselves, why are we having that anxiety? And I think if we were to ask ourselves, why are we having such anxiety, we might realize that, yes, it may have something to do with the social structures, but it may also have something to do with the fact that we have not been exercising a moral core. We have not been exercising a sense of moral agency. That there's a certain sense, you know, that when Kennedy asked, not what you can do for your country, not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, that falls on very, you know, that's a very nice memorial type moment from 50 years ago, but it doesn't really affect us. So
right.
There's something that...
And now the question people are asking is, what is your country doing to you?
Yes, right. Exactly. And so there's a certain sense that the moral core here in our country... that the moral conscience that maybe existed as we went to war at the end of the 30s and into the 40s, that there was a sense of responsibility and a sense of moral choice and a sense of moral obligation and moral responsibility. But, you know, there's only so much of a history that we can live on the success of the Second World War. We're now 60 years out, 70 years out. We need to be able to say, where has conscience been since then? And, you know, we can look at the civil rights movement, but we can also see how arrested the civil rights movement has been. So there's, you know, when I get anxious about the way we will talk about conscience when this document comes out, because Americans will receive it, I think, as a legal concept to
right.
say whether we can dissent and whether we can receive communion or whether I'm entitled to this. And we'll default to this rather silly, truncated, arrested development of conscience.
So, what is received according to the mode of the receiver, right? So, yeah.
And I think this is where our church in the United States has to really trust its laity and its religious and its clergy to actually do some exercises of conscience.
Yeah.
It would be good for, you know, we're seeing the bishops, they're using conscience, but they're using it as a legal thing in their lawsuit on Obamacare. This is the way we see conscience, as a clause rather than as a, you know, Kerry asked me in the beginning, what is conscience? I say it's the core of your moral agency.
Right.
And that's what I think is really missing in our country right now.
Indeed. That would be apparent, I think, to most observers. The article is called "Examining Conscience: Ancient Wisdom on Judgment, Justice, and the Heart" by James F. Keenan of Boston College. It's going to appear in the April 4th to 11th, 2016 issue of America. Father Keenan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Kerry.
All
by
right.
the way, they say the document is 300 pages long.
Oh my God! Can I, in good conscience, give enough time to that reading that document?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.